All right. Oye, oye, oye. Claims is now in session. Yeah. Oh, look, this is before the sport. God bless the United States and his BTC.
Good morning. I'm Chief Judge Allen, and to my right is Judge Peach. To my left is Judge Alvey, and we're convened this morning to consider arguments in the consolidated cases of Allen Heath Gladish versus Douglas A. Collins, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 242638, and William Burwell versus Douglas Collins, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 2433-3371. Would counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, make your appearance?
Kenneth Dohakis, Carpenter Chartered for both appellants.
Good morning, Mr. Dohakis, for the secretary.
James Heiberg on behalf of the secretary, and with me today is co-counsel is Melissa.
Welcome, both of you. Mr. Dohakis, it looks like you want to reserve 7 minutes for rebuttal. Well, we'll make that happen, and you can start whenever you'd like.
Good morning. May it please the court. On behalf of Mr. Gladish and Mr. Burwell, I do want to thank this court for the opportunity to present their appeals. We are here today because of VA's mistakes. VA was supposed to withhold and pay the representative for both appellants past due benefits. And in the words of the VA, the secretary mistakenly overlooked the fee agreement and did not withhold any amounts for fees. This led VA to pay the representative and then to later try to recoup the money from the appellants. There are two issues presented. First is whether that VA's reduction of appellants' future compensation payments represents a reduction in compensation under 5112. And the second is that an erroneous award, as it's used in 5112B10, includes erroneous actions like what happened here, where VA overpays the veteran by overlooking a withholding fee contract.
So, Mr. Dohakis, I've got a hypothetical. Let me spin it out here for a second. But let me tell you why I'm asking this, right? So, in Casey, we didn't deal with a situation in which there was anything beyond a one-time payment. I think it was specially adapted housing, but whatever it was a one-time. But one of the points we made about the reduction portion of the statute, that word, was that the award that was made to Ms. Casey, I think it was exactly right. I mean, down to the penny. It just wasn't separated appropriately, okay? So with that as background, let me say this. Let's assume that a veteran files just a simple claim, a claim seeking service connection for a wrist disability, and they file it on February 1, 2024. After development on June 1, 2025, VA issues a rating decision that grants service connection at 30% effective the date of the claim. So February 1, 2024. Okay? You with me so far?
Yes, sir.
Yes, it's not a complicated hypothetical, but it takes a while to get out. So as a result of that grant, then two things will happen. One, there's going to be a retroactive payment from February 1, 2024 to June 1, 2025. And we can calculate that just basically by math, right? You just do that. And then we're going to have a running stream of benefits that will be paid each month into the future based on the 30%. Now, most of the time, we just stop there. But it would be possible to have an actuary, for example, determine the present value of that continuing stream of payments, right? They do that all the time for all sorts of things, you know, mortality tables and all of this, right? So if you were able to do that, you would have the retroactive payment, and then you'd have this continuing stream of benefits that you could calculate would have a present value today. Are you with me now?
Yes, John.
Okay, you add those two things together, and that gives you the amount of the award. Now, we normally don't do that because we don't have reason to, but you could do it. Now, if you did that, wouldn't this situation essentially be just like Casey in this sense? The award amount would never change unless it was calculated inappropriately, right? You got exactly what you were supposed to get. It's just some portion of that should have been cleaved off. And that's what I'm struggling with, which is that sounds exactly like the court's logic in Casey. And so why would the continuing stream of payment here that we have make it different?
The primary difference, Your Honor, is that in Casey, the court specifically limited its ruling to that first number that you described in your hypothetical, the retroactive back. And they said that that cannot be reduced. And I think we agree with that in a general sense. The distinction here is that not only did they pay that retroactive amount to the veteran, but they additionally paid the representative whatever that person was supposed to get. And so there was an excess amount of money paid to the veteran. Again, as Casey recognized, it's not being paid to the representative. It's being given to the representative, but it's the veteran's award that he has told the VA, hey, I want you to send this over to my representative. So there was an excess amount of money given to the veteran in the form of two different payments. And so the veteran got the full amount, and then 20 additional percent was given to the attorney or to the representative, or he was a claims agent. And so then the VA decided to recoup the money that way. And that's what makes this case different from Casey, in that there was $13,000 in Mr. Gladish's case and I think $1,000 or so in Mr. Burwell's case that was paid in excess because the VA didn't give the money to the representative as they were supposed to.
But isn't that the same functionally as what happened in Casey? I mean, I agree. Let me just tell you, and I'll talk to VA about this, but VA's counsel about this, but I agree with you. I am somewhat baffled because I've seen this a number of times where VA makes a mistake. Everybody makes a mistake. Lots of things going on. And they pay 100 cents on the dollar to the veteran when they should have paid 80. They recognize the mistake and then pay the 20 to the attorney or agent, thereby paying 120 cents on the 100 cents dollar. And I understand VA's position, as they've said in the past, is we're legally obligated to pay the claims agent. But the problem is the person that gets worked over in that is always the veteran. But that doesn't actually get to the fact of whether or not there's a reduction. And so in Casey, it was the same thing. They overpaid. They paid 120% on the dollar. And that isn't that exactly what happened with Mr. Gladish? So the point I'm trying to get at is, if there's a difference here, or if there's a legal difference here from Casey, it seems to me it's got as to what is a reduction. There are other things that are different, compensation, for example. But that as a reduction, it's got to be that somehow the continuing stream of benefits here is different from the continuing stream of DIC benefits from which they took in Casey.
I don't know that I agree with that entirely, Your Honor, because, again, in Casey, the court explicitly did not consider the DIC running benefits. And so their decision was exclusive and narrow on whether a reduction in the accrued benefits occurred. And the court said no, because that money had already been paid out. And there was some discussion both in the supplemental briefing and even in the court's decision about whether the appellant was asking them, the court, to look at the DIC benefit payments. And I think the court ended on, we don't really know, but we're not going to address that.
And so your view would be that in Casey, and you're right, for reasons that I'm not sure of, the appellant's counsel specifically disclaimed any focus on the DIC portion of this and only on the, I think, specially adapted housing. So your view would be that the court, or leave the court out of it, your view is that there was a reduction in benefits in Casey too. It was the DIC that was reduced. And it's just that the appellant didn't argue that in the case or disclaimed that as an argument.
Yes, Your Honor, I think that's accurate. And we know that there's a reduction because, as we pointed out in our brief, page 58 in the Gladish RBA and 224 in Mr. Burwell, the VA sent a letter and said, we are going to reduce your monthly compensation, $1,098 for Mr. Gladish, $70 for Mr. Burwell, until they take back the money that they overpaid. And so there is a reduction. The statute does not is not exclusive to reductions that happened in the past that we now need to recover. It just says when there is a reduction of compensation. And there's a list of several ways that it can be reduced. And admittedly, as we pointed out in our brief, yeah, a lot of them are things that have already happened in the past or maybe something near in the future. We're getting a divorce next month. It'll be finalized. And so that reduction is going to happen then. But subsection B10 is very broad in that by reason of an erroneous award based on administrative error. And here, the parties seem to agree. I don't know that the secretary will quite go this far, but we read their brief to agree, the board's decision to agree, that the VA messed up here. It was their fault. Clearly erroneous is the words in their brief. It was clearly erroneous to give that money to the veteran. And excuse me. Looking at the so the second issue, as I mentioned in my opening, is what is an erroneous award? This court in Dent defined that and held that it includes erroneous actions So it is an erroneous. I apologize, I lost my page here. But at any rate, in Dent, the court defined an erroneous award to specifically, and the phrase they used was an erroneous action, and that's what we think happened here, is that they didn't give him the wrong rating as we typically see, or they didn't fail to make an adjustment on a dependent pay. Which is another similar one. Here, they made it an action. They paid the veteran twice for the 20% fee, and then on their own mistake. And that's why we think 5112B10 does apply and does offer relief for both appellants.
The first couple words of 5112B10 includes that the effective date of a reduction or discontinuance will be a certain date. It doesn't, I mean, it isn't 5112 really about setting an effective date? In fact, it's in a chapter that calls it effective dates.
It is, Your Honor, to a large degree, but again, the reduction itself is recognizing, and I think when you compare B9 to B10, I think it becomes much more clear on what Congress was trying to do with this. And Dent talked about this.
Could you answer my question though first?
Yes.
But isn't this about setting an effective date? It's not about the propriety of collecting a debt.
Yes, Your Honor, it is. And so what B10 is doing is it's saying you, there is a reduction in your compensation, and because it was our fault, the effective date, it's essentially an accounting mechanism, I think, but it's saying the effective date of that reduction is your last payment, which is essentially saying it's there, we all acknowledge it's there, but because it's our mistake, we're essentially not going to recover it. And looking specifically again at Dent and even Casey, when they talked about the legislative history, the court highlighted that the Congress was interested in this kind of a situation when it included subsection B10 into the statute. So yes, it is an effective date provision, but again, the reduction is happening in the future. And as we talked about in our briefing, this statute is both backward and forward looking. And so even though the erroneous action happened, it's not the typical one that we see where we have, you know, the wrong rating assigned or what have you. This is one where they just gave too much money to the veteran and have to establish that there was an overpayment. But again, under B10, because it was sole administrative error, then they're not going to recover the money.
So what's the another phrase in there is an erroneous award. And you've pointed to Dent a little bit there and everything. But what was erroneous about the award here? I mean, the award is the award, and it was misallocated instead of going to the representative, the agent, and the veteran. It went solely to the veteran. So the award is accurate, right? There was no erroneous award. It just was misallocated between the two of them.
At that point, correct, Your Honor, but then the VA made an erroneous award by paying the attorney, or the, I'm sorry, the representative, the fee.
No, that's not, what's erroneous about that then? That was actually proper, legally mandated.
Well, it was required ahead of time. And so, and this is where I think is a little confusing on what exactly the VA did, but the fact is that one, the veteran was paid too much money in the form of 100% of the retro plus an additional 20% on the fee. That money was to the veteran. And even though the payment went to the attorney or the representative, it was still a payment to the veteran in which he essentially assigned, as I like to think of it under the statute, that allows him to assign that money to the representative. And so,
and I'll use your language. There was an excess amount of payment. And that was recouped or sought to be recouped. How is an excess, when someone gets the full award, no error at all, but then there's an excess or extra payment, how is that an erroneous award? And not what you call it, an excess payment that, we're going to collect as a debt to the government.
I mean, again, Your Honor, the statutory language, it's an erroneous award. They gave the award to the veteran in error. And Dent specifically talks about what is an erroneous award, and it's an erroneous award. And I'm looking on page 374 of that decision. As used in B9 and 10, include erroneous payments made subsequent to the initial award, which would cover this. And then Courtney, and then those do not create a debt or overpayment because of this B10. And so it is an erroneous award because in the sense that it was paid to the veteran, it was on payment. An award, I think Dent is equating payment and award as being one and the same in this statute. And so when additional money is given to the veteran or anybody, really, I mean, this doesn't necessarily apply. Well, I guess it would because it's compensation, but when the VA pays the veteran too much money, an erroneous award has happened, and this statute lays out how to figure out if to recoup and if they do how.
Okay, so the party that's going to bear the brunt of this error then is the taxpayer, right?
Yes, John.
We got two choices really. We can unjustly enrich the veteran with a 20% excess of compensation, and have the taxpayer pay that, or the debt can be recouped, and the veteran get their full award, 100% of their award, with 20% properly allocated to the attorney. Those are the two choices, right?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that generally those are the – that's correct.
And so you want the court to read this statute along with the debt recoupment of overpayment statute and say the taxpayers should be on the hook for this.
Well, I don't want the court to say that, Your Honor. I want the court.
That's a practical effect.
Well, I want the court to acknowledge that this is what Congress said. Congress has taken that on themselves, that they will pay that mistake because it was VA's mistake, and they've allocated the cause and effect, the risk analysis here, and said we could take it from the veteran, and we certainly have been at least.
We're not taking anything from the veteran. If we said, no, you're getting 100% of what you're entitled to.
Right, Your Honor. But Congress here has said in B-10 that even though you shouldn't have gotten it, we're not going to take it back because it was our mistake. And so, yes, the taxpayer's paying it, but this is simply what Congress wanted when it included this subsection in the statute. And it was added, and Casey and particularly Dent talked about when it was added and some of the discussion in the congressional record on why they were doing it. And they specifically highlighted the fact that, look, these are mistakes. We're not going to put that on the shoulders of our veterans because VA made the mistake. And I would just point out, too, that this was a very simple mistake that was overlooked. I mean, this fee contract was plainly there. Their records, their computer system tags it as a fee case. And so there shouldn't have been any reason for them to have made this mistake. And as Judge Allen pointed out at the beginning, this happens quite a bit. And one of our hopes with this is that this would, you know, obviously, if the court agrees, that the VA would be more careful, because this causes a big disruption in the lives of veterans and representatives, to be honest. So again, this is what Congress wanted. The veteran is not being unjustly enriched in the normal sense, because Congress has said we're not going to recover this. And so it may be an enrichment, but it's not unjust in the typical sense based on Congress's intent.
Counsel, yes,
Your Honor.
I'm not sure I understand what you say when what you mean by award, erroneous award. What is the erroneous award? That lump sum payment that Mr. Gladish and Mr. Burwell got, or is the erroneous award the monthly ongoing payment that they receive for disability compensation or for whatever reason? Is it the monthly award, or is it that lump sum award?
It's neither, Your Honor. So the monthly compensation is what's being reduced, at least as we read the statute. The erroneous award is in paying the additional 20% fee after the full retroactive benefits were paid out. And so whether you want to describe it as they shouldn't have given him 100% of the retro, or they shouldn't have additionally paid the 20% to the representative, that's the award that was erroneous. That's the erroneous action by the VA that caused the overpayment. And we acknowledge this is an overpayment. He should not have gotten it. And to Judge Falvey's point, that there's no disputing that. But again, Congress has said you can't reduce the benefits in the future when it's the VA's fault.
But how are they reducing his benefit? Because the definition of compensation is the monthly ongoing payment at which he's getting, let's say, $100 every month. And he gets $100 every month. But out of the $100, he'll take $20. The VA takes $20 out, but he still got his $100.
Well, he doesn't, Your Honor.
But, I mean, he's still entitled to that. They never reduced his entitlement to $100. They took a payment out.
Correct. Yes, they do. They reduced.
And so when he's done paying the award, the 20%, his monthly compensation is still $100. So, I mean, I don't understand he's still getting $100, just that the payment of $20 is made, not his entitlement.
Well, I understand your question, Your Honor, but we read reduction of compensation to be a literal reduction in compensation. As Casey described it, it's making it smaller, making it less, which they've done. And again, I pointed to the two records citations, $1,098 for Mr. Gladish and $70 for Mr. Burwell. They reduced his compensation. There's no difference between this. And let's say there was a CUE found in a prior decision where they shouldn't have awarded benefits. And this happens quite frequently. And I think the secretary would agree that when there's a CUE in a prior decision, their monthly payments today don't change. They're still entitled to whatever percentage of compensation they're entitled to. But because there was an error in the past and they shouldn't have gotten some money then they the VA will recoup it, or at least they'll say we made a mistake. And so under B-10, we're not going to, the effective date of that is the date of your last payment. And so the reduction is in the future for however many months it takes to recoup whatever money was overpaid. And notwithstanding the fact that, yes, their monthly compensation will revert back up to the normal amount, a reduction still happens under the definition of Casey because their month-to-month payment was smaller for that period of time. I see I'm over my time, so I'll
stay. I've added a bit of time, and it sounds like Judge I just had one quick question before you sit down. And it's on your alternate argument for Mr. Gladish. I just want to make sure I get this. So first of all, the argument about notice that you make, or actually it's really that the board didn't address an argument that you raised about notice. That only applies to Mr. Gladish. It doesn't apply to Mr. Burwell.
That's
right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And second, can you just, in a nutshell, describe for me why, let's assume that the board erred in not addressing the argument. Why was it prejudicial to Mr. Gladish, given that it seemed like the representative understood exactly what was going on, given the arguments they made to the board?
Well, it's prejudicial for at least two reasons, Your Honor. One is it's mandatory. It's statutorily mandatory, and it informs the veteran and the representative how to proceed and which different options they have. Mr. Gladish's representative did note, and I can find the site, and when I come back up, and I'll show it, I'll point it to the court, but that he was a little unclear on why. I don't remember the exact phrasing, but essentially he said, I don't understand why you're doing this. You didn't cite to any law. This is clearly not in accordance with the law as I understand it. So for at least those two reasons, it's prejudicial, but primarily it's statutory mandatory. Greer says the board does not provide that notice. And without that notice, the entire AMA system is built on the veteran's not able to effectively participate as recognized in Simmons and even Shinseki's v. Sanders at Supreme Court.
Thank you, Mr. Dahakis. And before you begin, I gave Mr. Dahakis a few extra minutes, so feel free to use some extra time if you need it. You don't have to, but you got it.
Good morning. May it please the court. The court should affirm the board's decisions in Gladish and Burwell because the overpayments in these cases were validly created. VA did err by failing to withhold the attorney's fees, and it was clearly erroneous. But it was not made in relation to any reduction or discontinuance of benefits. Rather, it was merely in relation to a distribution, as the board's noted in these cases. Non-reduction, therefore 5112B10 does not apply.
And I understand we wouldn't get there if we determined that this isn't a reduction, right? But I just want to, and you've said VA erred, right? But the payment here, the mistake here in terms of the not allocating the 20% to the agent, I think it was, that was entirely VA's fault, right? The neither veteran had anything to do with making that payment.
Correct, Your Honor. And again, in a lump payment situation, there is nothing that the veteran could have done that would have fostered that initial error.
Right. So it's just because I think, and frankly, I may be getting this mixed up with Casey. So if I am, I apologize. But in one of these three cases, Casey, Burwell, or Gladish, the secretary in their briefing said something akin to, it's not solely our mistake because Mr. Gladish should have known or Mr. Blank should have known.
This is correct, Your Honor. Both boards addressed the same right. issue, stating that, and they both relied on Jordan v. Brown, which holds that sole administrative error is not present when the payee knew or should have known that the payments were erroneous. And the boards here relied on the fee agreements, which clearly delineate that the representative is supposed to get 20% of the fee. So essentially charged with knowledge of the contents of their fee agreement, which is Hornbook law, that a party is charged with knowledge of the contents of the contract they signed, that therefore it was not sole administrative error, and that the appellants here bore some responsibility towards knowledge of the overpayment. And again, that therefore 5112B10 would not apply. So both boards did address the issue. I mean, they both found, of course, that there was no reduction, which is consistent with the logic of Casey. But then even if it did apply, there was no sole administrative error by virtue of appellant's knowledge of the contents of the agreements.
I confess to you, just on that point, it seems rather bizarre to me that somebody's knowledge, as VA is talking about, could have any relationship to the making of the payment. I can think of lots of reasons why somebody's knowledge could come into play for other reasons, but it seems to me that B10, and again, we don't get there if it's not a reduction, but to think that what B10 is talking about, it seems to me, is talking about the mistake. And it seems to me no amount of somebody's knowledge can affect VA's mistake. I mean, it's not like I could imagine a situation where a veteran called in and said, hey, listen, I know the paperwork isn't there yet, but I'm not represented by anybody. Don't pay anybody else. And then, you know, VA relies on that. And you say, well, it's not. Yeah, we should have paid him because we had the fee agreement, but we shouldn't. You know, it's not solely our fault. The veteran said don't do it. So I'm just saying if we get there, I think it's really hard to say that the veteran somehow contributed to the mistake.
Well, that is in the sense that they had nothing to do with the payment, of course. But yes, indeed, they knew that they had received too much. That is the logic that the board's relied upon, relying on the Jordan case.
And is it VA's position at work? It clearly is your position, but what is the basis on which when you figure out you've made a mistake, which we all make day in and day out, and you've paid the veteran $100 when you should have paid them $80 because $20 should have gone to somebody else. Why do you then automatically then pay the $20 to somebody else? And then say, oh my goodness, we paid $120 when we should have paid $100. And the one person we're going to take it from is the veteran.
Well, as referenced in the earlier part of the argument, by law, VA would have to pay the representative despite the error. I think otherwise, in terms of a policy position, it does not seem to be a condition in the fee agreements in this case, but certainly I don't think you'd want a situation where representatives or attorneys are forced to sue their clients for the fees that they were held.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you could make a policy judgment to say then that's a business decision for the lawyer, as opposed to what the VA's position is when that happens, is they end up taking money from the veteran. It may very well be not a reduction, right? And the veteran might not have been entitled to get it. But it's just, you know, it gets us into these positions where, you know, the lawyer or agent is fully paid. And then we have to have this issue with a veteran.
I believe when correspondence is initiated to the appellants in these cases, they are provided 60 days or so to repay it before anything else would happen. So there is the opportunity to repay the overpayment in short order without having to go this far in terms of an overpayment determination and a subsequent collection of arrearages from that. We rely, of course, on the reasoning in Casey that it applies to the extent that an overpayment determination regarding the failure to withhold attorney's fees from the lump sum does not result in any sort of reduction. Here, Helen suffered no change in circumstances. The creation of the overpayment placed them in the exact same position they would have been. And as referenced in Casey, VA can't diminish a one-time lump sum payment size or amount retroactively. You can only get collected going forward from the excess amount paid.
Counsel, excuse me. I just want, before you go any further, did I understand correctly that VA has paid both attorneys out of the VA funds, not from the award?
No, Your Honor. VA separately paid.
And did both, did both appellants, did you have recoupments against both appellants, and have they recoupments been fully, the 20% fully recovered?
To the best of my knowledge, based on a review of BBMS, I do not believe that any collection has been taken on these overpayment determinations.
Well, there's no collection having been made yet.
As far as I understand, based on my review of BBMS.
And so just so I understand that, so nothing has been withheld from either one of their monthly checks? Is that what you're saying?
With regards to these specific overpayment determinations, no, I do not.
Is there some intent that VA is going to do that? Because now it sounds like we're talking about an entirely hypothetical situation.
I imagine it probably does not happen until there's some resolution to the case at issues, the cases at issue here, before they would perhaps collect on the overpayment.
And so I'm sort of interested in that. So is it VA's policy, you may not know this, but I certainly had assumed that this was being done. Is this a situation where you're waiting until we say something?
It may be. Like I said, the review of the VBMS records does not indicate that these particular overpayment determinations have been blocked.
And so then is some sort of notice provided once it's going to happen?
I am uncertain of that, Your Honor. I don't know if we can simply rely on the original decision. I do not know if there would be any further correspondence indicating when there would be a start date to a collection under 5314.
So is there a ripeness issue?
Yeah, because you know, in other situations, you know, we get a lot of complaints from the appellant side where there is a reduction at the RO, right, where they propose a reduction. It's a true reduction. You're going from 30 to 10. You get the 60 days, and then you get the implementation decision from from the RO that reduces your compensation to 10. It's not as if VA says, and we're going to wait to see whether all appeals are done, and we'll keep paying you 30. They start to pay 10 immediately. So this is coming out of the blue here, whether it's ripeness or you know, a hypothetical question. VA says it's going to do it, but you don't know if you will do it. You don't know when you're going to do it.
Chief, if I could just maybe depart from procedure here, could we ask counsel if he knows whether they've been paid?
Sure. Mr. Dehakis, do you know whether this reduction has happened or is happening?
Understanding it, sorry, Your Honor. I can't say with certainty, but this is VA's process, and they just recoup it, and then it reverses, and they send the money back. But I can certainly verify that. If anybody's listening right now, I can certainly verify that soon after.
Yes, and that would be helpful. I'm gonna go out on a limb here with my colleagues, but I also think, no criticism of you personally, but VA should know the answer to this question. And so if you were going to come in here and tell us nothing has been taken and it turns out that everything's been taken, I would like the secretary to also submit something saying what his definitive position is about whether there has been reduction. Okay.
Appellants in their briefing contend that Casey does not control simply because it applies to accrued benefits, but not to the compensation at issue here. Citing to the case of Nolan versus Nicholson at footnote 59 in Casey, the court expressed no opinion whether 5112 applied to compensation resulting in both a one-time retroactive payment of past due benefits and recurring monthly benefits. But Nolan indicates that lump sum payments of past due retroactive benefit payments are considered periodic monthly benefit, as well as 5121A specifically defines accrued benefits the same way. So they're similarly situated. Moreover, any payment to an attorney or representative must come from the lump sum award. It can't come from the future portions of payments being paid forward as part of their fee, and that's directed by 5904D2AI. And 38 CFR 14636H3. So when we're talking about the lump sum payments, it has to be taken either in the Casey situation with accrued benefits or in these two cases, the attorney's fee has to be taken from the lump sum. Again, as we've argued, there's no reduction. Everybody's in the same position they would have been. But there's no attorney fees being taken out of future benefits by statute and regulation.
I don't understand the import of that at all. So, the reality is, you know, six of one, half dozen of another. The 20% attorney's fees that VA was required to pay to the agent, I mean, functionally is being taken out of the future stream of benefits now. I understand what you're saying. As a matter of law, it's only supposed to come out of the past two benefits. But the problem was VA didn't do that. And the only way then to get the money is to functionally take it out of the future stream. But I don't understand why that matters.
Well, yeah, Your Honor, I was trying to draw the distinction between the accrued benefits, which Casey essentially carves out of the scope of 5112, and the lump sum benefits here, which conceivably are compensation. The lump sum payments and the withholdings, essentially both situations are the exact same, and the logic and reasoning of Casey should apply to the lump sum payments here, even to the extent that they are considered compensation. And again, with regards to the reasoning of Casey, going towards 5112B10, not applying to lump sum payments, does not apply to lump sum payments. You know, the effective date language, again, of 5112A points to awards, not a one-time award. And specifically, with regards to the language of 5112B10, there is the language stating last payment, which, of course, implies more than one payment, which would therefore really not apply to a lump sum payment as an issue in these two appeals. So in conclusion, we request the court affirm the board decisions for the reasons so stated.
I have a question about the AMA remand issue. I recognize that, is it 2802? Says that the board shall remand, unless it's going to be a fully favorable grant, shall remand due to desist errors. And that has its basis in statute, the statute that requires that. Then 802 goes on to add that the board may remand other issues when there is a reasonable possibility of favorable treatment. Where does VA get the authority to add that second sentence?
Sorry, Your Honor, for the regulation?
Yeah. Where do they get the authority to add that? Congress spoke on it and said, this is it. We're going to stop the churn. Duty to assist areas, you shall remand them. And it's silent about the rest. And then VA adds that second sentence.
Well, I'm simply going to rely on a gap-filling situation there. But with regards to what we had argued in the brief in Gladish, that there was simply really no genuine issue of notice that in remand, there was no further development to be had. So that was why we tested that argument raised by appellant there.
Right. But if you get beyond the notice issue and you know, is VA's position that the board couldn't remand it?
Our position was that there was
or that they may. And if it's May, where do they get the authority for that?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that they, again, there was no further development that could have been had. I know that that doesn't completely answer the question, but I'm quite frankly not really able to answer it probably to your satisfaction.
Thank you. Mr. Takis, we'll give you your 7 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to just begin with the collection issue again, just to reiterate. It's our understanding that the money was already recouped, and we will verify that and get that information to the court. But to the extent that it has not, again, I'm not aware of the VA ever doing this. There was no indication that they would not seek to recoup it. And so there is a reduction there regardless whether it's been already done or threatened to be done. Obviously, if the secretary tells us today that he does not intend to recoup it, then we're happily accept that.
Although if in fact, if we ended up ruling in your client's favor, then part of the part of that relief would be then assuming that this has already all been taken to then give it back.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, as our soliloquy with Judge Falvey, that was Congress's intent in that they're the government's going to accept that that risk and take that on, so that we don't burden the veterans with having to do that.
I hate to be dense, but maybe I'm just not getting it. So 5112 says uses reduction and discontinuation. We're just talking about reduction here, right? But section 5314 talks about deduct from an overpayment. So when Congress overpays you, old VA, you can go get that. Not only can you go get that overpayment, get it back. And they called that a deduction. But if it gives you an award through error and needs to take that away, they call that a reduction or discontinuation. So why is this not the former, the deduction of the overpayment rather than a reduction of an erroneous award?
Well, because again, Your Honor, the secretary sent letters to both appellants and said, we will reduce your compensation payments by a set amount. And so they've reduced their compensation.
Well, that's you know, because they said that in a letter doesn't make it so. It doesn't make it that was a legal characterization. Is a practical effect. Your future payments are going to be reduced by a certain amount. They could have said your future payments from your future payments, we're going to deduct this amount, thereby reducing your payment to this amount. They could have said that, but the legal import is what in 5314 they say deduct over payments for debts. Congressional authority to do that. Congressional mandate to do that.
Right.
Why is it not that rather than a reduction of an erroneous award when the award was not erroneous or certainly wasn't erroneous to the detriment of the veteran?
Well, that's, again, the two statutes work in harmony, Your Honor. And I think...
Well, it seems to me you're asking us to ignore the 5314.
Well, I'm not, Your Honor, because I think that if you look at B9, okay, and you compare and contrast the two, if the same thing happened and it was the veteran's fault, then the VA would be authorized under B9 to recoup the overpayment with the effective date of the reduction, the date of the award. But because it's the secretary's fault, it's the date of last payment. And so, again, we see this shifting of responsibility between the person at fault. There's no doubt that there's in both cases, B9 and B10, the VA is relying on the statute to recoup the overpayment. We don't dispute that Congress gave that authority to the VA. But what this statute does is it says when there's an overpayment because of an erroneous award based solely on administrative error, we're not going to take it back. And I just reiterate, going back to both Dent and Casey cited to the congressional record where that was clearly what Congress wanted. And both of those panel decisions pointed to and relied upon that in assessing the plain language of the statute. In both cases, they talked about Chevron, we know after Loper-Bright, but they both assessed the plain language of the statutes to mean what they described in those rulings. So, yes, they can recover it through that mechanism, but when it's the fault of the VA, they don't recover it. They essentially eat the cost, so to speak, on the back of the VA because of their mistake.
Denton, what was the other one? Denton?
Casey, Your Honor.
Casey.
So, and I just want to touch very, you know, just to reiterate what Judge Allen was saying about the administrative error aspect, in that there's no possible way that either of these veterans could have anticipated that the VA would make this mistake. And the fact that they knew that they had a contract is completely irrelevant to what caused the VA to mess up, to overlook the fee agreement, to pay the money out when it shouldn't have. And in a footnote in one of the reply briefs, I think we cited to Westling 23-7164. It's non-precedential, but on essentially the same facts, this court reversed that finding. And on notice, Judge Falvey, 20.802A, again, we think there's no statutory authority for that. It's not gap filling. There's no basis in law for restricting the board's actions only to those actions by the agency that would aid in substantiating the claim. They didn't point to anything. To the extent that regulation restricts their ability to remand for statutorily required notice, which again the board cannot provide, it's invalid. I think that's the only points that I had on rebuttal. And if there are no further questions, we would ask the court to find that there was a reduction, that there was an erroneous award based on sole administrative error, and to reverse the board and order them to pay the money back to the veterans.
Yes. If the award, if the 20% has been repaid by the appellants, you want the court to, what if they've repaid it, what do you want us to do? Give it back to him?
Yes, Your Honor.
But even though the Veterans Administration has already paid the representative?
Yes, Your Honor. The money would go back to the appellants, to the veterans, because it was their compensation that was reduced for those months in order to recoup that money.
But then... Isn't there some, to use Judge Falvey's phrase, some unjust enrichment going on here?
Again, Your Honor, I don't think so. I don't think that it's unjust because Congress said they're not responsible for that. And so when an erroneous award happens, when an erroneous action occurs as described in Dent, the VA cannot recover the overpayment. And that's just simply Congress's choice to put the onus of the mistake on the VA instead of the veteran. And just keep in mind that, disabled veterans, they rely on this money. And when their monthly payments, yes, they got the lump sum payment, but they rely on these monthly payments in their budgets. And it's not unusual for that money to go toward paying off debt, fixing the home and other things, and reducing someone's monthly compensation by $1,000.
Isn't that reason then to ask for a waiver?
They can, Your Honor, but that's not – well, in at least in Mr. Gladish's case, he did pursue a waiver. The board didn't address it. That's part of the reasons and bases alternative argument. Obviously, if the court finds in our favor on the 5112, we don't need to get to waiver because there is no overpayment. But they certainly can pursue those, and they often do. They typically go in separate streams. The waiver is handled by a different part of the VA and makes its way to the board separately. But at least Mr. Gladish here did pursue or attempt to pursue a waiver and so far hasn't gotten any final decision from the VA on that. But that is one option. But again, when the statute says that they cannot collect the overpayment, then there is nothing to waive. And so there's no basis for a waiver in the first instance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to both counsel for the presentations this morning. We're going to come down and greet counsel, but for now, the case is submitted.
All rise.